back to another episode of Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy. I'm Marianne Fengler, and we are here with the final installment of our series from our 10-year anniversary panel. When we left off, Sue Schmidt had just talked about the beginnings of the volunteer program, and now we're going to talk a little bit about the state of Iowa coming through with some money for us, and how the National Museum of the Surface Navy came to be, and take some audience questions. So, again, apologies for the audio recorded outside. And bear with us, but enjoy.
Well, and the state of Iowa came in, right? So where did they jump into play? You said, well, we're about to get another matching gift, right, Bruce? So how did they get involved in the first place? I mean, obviously the ship's named after them, but why would they have an inkling to come out and want to get involved in a battleship?
We have some incredible supporters in the state of Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, and some of those are still on our board. We've actually got 3 spots on our board reserved specifically for Iowans, so we never lose that connection to Iowa. And there's folks on that board that are passionate about the ship, and are, let's be frank, they know a lot of people. But at the end of the day, our National Leadership Council chair that we know of today, Ambassador Branstad, who was Governor Branstad at the time, has been a steadfast supporter of the USS Iowa going back into the early 80s when she was commissioned in 83, when she was the governor, he was the governor the first time around. And these folks knew that if they didn't step up and take a leadership role in saving this ship, that this ship would go to the scrapyards. And let's be honest, it was a very real risk. I will tell you, I can speculate, I believe she actually was probably getting prepared to go to the scrapyards, especially with some of the work that was done on her prior to us getting her. They really felt passionately about saving the ship name for their state, and they went in and put in a appropriation request for $3 million to go to whatever organization was awarded the ship, and so we knew if we were able to get the ship awarded, we were able to get $3 million released from the state, and that's how that played. But really, at the end of the day, I mean, it's Iowans that came in with that lead gift, and by the way, this weekend we have another 50 to 75 Iowans coming in their annual pilgrimage to the ship over July 4th weekend. The WHO radio listeners group that's been coming here for 10 years starting this year.
Sorry.
I didn't think we were doing the gun shoot tonight. How many of you are from San Pedro? San Pedro likes to celebrate. Let me just be clear. That's normal.
That's a normal night.
We have a couple questions in the crowd. Is that what the hands are raising for? Oh, okay, sorry.
They were just from San Pedro.
Oh, I missed that.
Iowans love their ship. San Pedrans love their ship even at this point. And so that's kind of how Iowa got involved, truthfully. Yeah.
But the money didn't show up until March of 2012.
Yeah, it didn't show up until March of 2012. So we were kind of just plugging ahead, freezing our butts off. Luckily, I was 365 pounds, so temperature was much easier on me than it was on the smaller folks on the team.
It was indescribably cold. We call it the armored ice box.
I don't want to bore everybody. We got fireworks at 9 o'clock or 9:20, I think is what it is. Well, and we got music still. So let's go for another 10 minutes and let people enjoy themselves and eat our food.
I wanted to fast forward, just because this is our story of how we got the battleship, how we kind of made our way through, how we got to L.A., been here for 10 years. Yes, was that yesterday or Wednesday? We had a fascinating conversation with Dale Jenkins, who wrote a book recently, and his book is positioned just prior to Battleship Iowa being built and launched. But he's talking about the international relations and the current events and all the affairs going on then that are still applicable today, and that kind of teed us up to why we were telling our story. So his story leads into ours. We get Iowa, now we're telling the story of the National Museum of the Surface Navy. I think that it was pretty amazing how that kind of fell into our laps, speaking of magic, of just the importance of the topics that we are going to be telling here. We're beyond just the Iowa story. We're a much larger story now.
So gosh, those are a lot of words, Kyle.
I try and piece them together. Yeah.
We'll tell the story about how we found National Museum.
Yeah.
I actually am going to tell a couple stories here because it goes back before then. After getting here, some of the early comments that I received from folks that do not have an inkling of what this is. Well, let me start out first by saying a battleship in LA is not quite the best match, let's all be honest. And so within the first 3 years, I was asked by several people who would visit this ship and look at it and go, all of this to kill people. And my response was all of this to keep the peace. And so fast forward to 2015, I think 15, 16, and I'm about to call somebody out here. But we partnered with the Port of LA and the city, worked with the Navy and USO and so many other partners to create what you know as Fleet Week today, LA Fleet Week. And I was blessed to meet a wonderful man back here, Brian. I know I'm going to throw you under the bus, but Brian Quinn, who worked with the strike group that was assigned to one of the Fleet Weeks. I think probably the second Fleet Week, right? 16, 17. And really through Fleet Week, the thought process of what our military does and what the Navy does and what a Navy ship is started to significantly shift and realize how important the men and women that serve in our military and how important our military is to protecting trade and commerce, humanitarian assistance and response, the protecting communications that go into the seas, making sure pirates don't take ships. Pirates are a very real thing, and they still take ships, and making sure those sea lanes move. I assume everybody in this room has bought a foreign good in the past 3 days. If you've gone to Target or any grocery store or anywhere else, you have. Whether you like it or not, you've bought something that's come across those oceans. And so we, as a consumer society, truly are beneficiaries of that. And Fleet Week gave an opportunity for the public to meet the men and women that serve every day and realize they're not Rambo. I think that's important to know. The men and women that serve our nation are not going out into the jungles when they wake up at 7 a.m. in the morning and going out and fighting this crazy war. They're Americans like we are. They're proud of their country and proud to serve. And many of them have you served. How much of your life was a boring job in the military where you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm just sitting around most of the time, you know, doing stuff, but you're not actually in something that's overly excitable? Hurry up and wait. And so really it highlighted the importance of why something like this exists and why our military exists and why our Navy exists and Marines and entire sea services. It slapped me in the face really hard. We started working on the National Museum in 17-18, realized we had to be something much bigger than just the Iowa if we were going to survive as a World War II battleship and remain relevant in our nation's future. So really it was a move about survivability. In a little bit of miracle, there's another one of the Iowa Magic walking into Navy History and Heritage Command and asking them what they were going to do with the National Museum of the Surface Navy, and they were getting ready to say no on it. And we said, we'll take it on, and are you interested? And they said, yeah, we're interested. Okay, we'll trademark license it. We trademark licensed the agreement, and that's how it really started. There was no pushing. It was the Iowa Magic like we talked about. It was a 45-minute conversation, Mike, in the office of the guy that ran the Navy Museums, and we took on one of their problems, and we solved their problem, and it made life easy for all of us, is really how it came together.
We just happened to be in D.C. and
at the right time.
Yeah, perfect timing.
We didn't try. We didn't even plan to go down to the Navy Yard, to tell you the truth. We didn't go to have a meeting with them. We were in other meetings, and we just ended up saying hi to them.
And the decision to actually go into his office and talk to him was made in the head.
Yeah, it was literally made in the head when we decided we probably should say hi because we're cruising around with a retired two-star admiral, and for those of you that may not know, you kind of have to announce when you show up somewhere on a base with a two-star admiral. It's not appropriate if you don't show up, so he was like, we probably should say, tell them that we're here, and so Mike went over there and told them, or Mike Shatinsky back there. So that's really how that all came together, and then it started grabbing its own legs really quick, and the story kept getting bigger. And I go to 2020, beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020, when it really slapped me in the face. During Fleet Week, there's something called DISCA, Defense Supported Civilian Authorities, and Lewis in San Francisco that you saw and kind of met. He's really kind of the innovator on that whole program around Fleet Week. He's the guy that started it, really pushed it hard. And so we'd done it for 3 or 4 years. I never really knew what it was, to be honest with you. I supported it, we funded it, but I wasn't quite clear on what it was until March of 2020, when the Mercy was coming here to LA. And I got a call from Brian Quinn over here, who I hadn't talked to for, what, 3 years, I think, probably 2 or 3 years. And Brian called me on my cell and said, "Hey, it's Brian. Hey, Brian, what are you doing? I haven't talked to you for a while. Well, I'm leading the Mission of the Mercy on the way up here. I'm heading up there." "Oh, great. Who do I need to talk to?" "Oh, you need to talk to Chief Tom Gazy over at the Port Police and talk to Jeff Guerrero over at the mayor's office. They'll be able to help you all out." And he called them, and the next day, within, what, 4 days, 5 days, it came in here pretty seamlessly with the Port Police. Here's another friend over here, Deputy Chief Allen, from the Port Police.
He likes cigars, too.
Oh, we're going to throw him under the bus, too. And so that relationship that was created through Fleet Week with the Port Police, the Port of Los Angeles, the Navy, that relationship, without knowing it, literally without having any clue that any of that stuff was going on, we all seamlessly worked together and knew how to work together and make things happen. And it was almost like a reunion. It was like, "Hey, guys, how you doing? Great to see you. It was so great to be back together," right? But 4 years of building that relationship allowed a mission to respond to the population in a very quick fashion. And we saw it happen with the setup of hospital beds throughout LA. The Army, the same process was done that way. We watched it happen throughout that entire process. And that's when I realized how important. It wasn't necessarily about the drill or the practice. It was about the relationships. And that's really what I guess as we go into the National Museum of the Surface Navy is really about, is I've now become a passionate supporter. I love the Iowa, don't get me wrong, but I have become a passionate supporter of, if we as a country, if us as Americans don't realize how reliant we are on maritime trade, we're doomed. I'm serious, we are doomed. The country that we know, if we don't make sure that we rely and understand how much we rely on that and support our sea services and allow others to take over our sea lanes and others to control the flow of commerce, we're in trouble, folks. And to me, that's what this museum is about. This museum is about doing everything it can in the way that everyday Americans understand, everyday Americans that don't have prior service can understand why this matters to them. And that's why we're doing it.
Well, thank you for all the work that you guys have done. I was fortunate enough to step on board last year and sit down in my office with a porthole nonetheless. But there's an incredible amount of work done, not just by you all, but those who have been involved the past 10 years to get us to where we are. And I don't know if people say, if they know of all of that work and can say thank you enough, but now that you've left us on a very positive note here about the outcome of the museum, it's important. But the port event is making more noise than us, so let me wrap this up and get the music going.
Yeah, we should get music and outblast them.
Doug had a question.
Did Doug have somebody have a question?
Got a question first.
Just one comment. You made quite clear that 90% of the crew here is volunteers, and I know that Sue worked her tush off up in Richmond, and she pulled in all her market, but what she forgot to tell everybody is what she did when she got thrown back to San Pedro, was setting up storefronts and all the interviewing she did down here. And you might want to expand upon that and say that you're always looking for more. Sue, if you want to explain how to reach out to you.
Okay, thank you for the plug. That was Doug Dowd's. And we are always looking for volunteers. And the best way is get a hold of, go onto our website and go to get involved and down to volunteer, and we have a volunteer application there. You can email me volunteer@labattleship.com.
And I would add that
bring you aboard.
This is amazing. This place truly is amazing because of the volunteers. When I hired out here, I didn't imagine I would have a whole bunch of volunteers to work with. We now do between 45,000 and 65,000 hours of volunteer time every year. And it's truly the lifeblood of this place, and it's a passion for me now. No one back here?
Is the ship going to stay in this location, or is it going to move up the channel?
So to answer your question, which is a difficult answer to provide you, which everybody is curious on that question, I will tell you there's a lot of goods, a lot of positives and negatives to that whole conversation. Not a lot of negatives, a lot of positives, less negatives. when we got here 10 years ago, this LA waterfront was not a booming destination, in all honesty. Over the past 10 years, it's really become a booming destination with conflicting things that we're now all working through. And the cruise business has returned in force at this point. And so handling the cruise business, handling the number of folks that are coming down here, that it is in the desire of everyone involved that relocating the ship to the new development, which would be the tourism-centric space, would be of the most benefit to all of the parties involved. Financing it is a piece of the puzzle that still needs to be determined. And let's be honest, we're not going to raise money to move the ship down to a private development. We're going to raise money to build a museum here. So I could tell you the Port of Los Angeles is very seriously looking at it and has a lot of interest in it and sees a lot of benefit in it. But it really comes down to a financial component more than anything.
Anybody else?
Let's smoke!
Cigars,
who's ready to smoke?
Cigars, barbecue, and bars. Still, let's fireworks soon. Let's
nothing else. Was that okay? Anybody else want to hear any stories? We can share more stories.
Share more stories.
You can grab us on the side.
We can talk off the microphone stories.
I just want to say on the podcast, because we will be broadcasting this as a podcast, I want to give a shout out to my bride who has been putting up with the super commute like Shelly for a decade, and that's a pretty big deal for the family supports for that super commute. And if anybody listening to the recording has any comments for us, please email us on podcast@labattleship.com.
So one closing statement, I'm going to do Kyle's job for him real quick, because I have to do that. We started out tonight with the second speaker, Bruce. So Bruce said the state's in for 6.7. Who's going to match the 6.7? Come on. We're going now. Now we get into the development side auctions. We got 6.7 on the table. Who's at 6.8?
Yeah.
6.8? 6.8. It's not working. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for watching. As usual, podcast@labattleship.com. If you'd like to give us questions, feedback, comments, any of that good stuff, podcast@labattleship.com. And thanks as ever for your support. Yeah.